right. Steve Darnell is the publisher and editor-in-chief of Nostalgia Digest magazine, host of Those Were the Days, a weekly show looking back at the simpler times, the happy days, the golden years of old-time radio and beyond. And joining me tonight to talk about the spring edition is Steve Darnell. What's going on, buddy?
Oh, well, it's... I'm just glad we're not waiting for another snowpocalypse, David.
I know, no kidding, right?
Yeah, I know. Feeling good. How are you?
I am good. I know every time you hear that theme on WGN, you wish that was just every week on WGN, right?
I do. You guys have an even stronger signal than my station, so yes.
Oh, WDCB is a great station. I love listening today. I was kind of ticked off because when I turned it on, I caught the like last 30 seconds of suspense, and that is one of my favorites.
Oh, yes. Great stuff.
Great stuff. Absolutely. Roger Badish joining us as well. You know, I love my Nostalgia Digest magazine when it shows up on my front porch. And it's all kinds of great stories, of course, of yesteryear, culled together by so many great people. And this edition is no different. On the cover is Martin and Lewis.
Yes. We just... I realized 45 years we've been publishing this, Dean and Jerry have never been on the cover of the Digest.
Get out of here.
And I thought,
wow.
Yeah. And I thought we have to change that. And thankfully, we had an author who had just, he contacted us, he'd written a book about Dean and Jerry, and I said, well, we can't print the whole book, and somebody already did that. But he came through with this great piece about Martin and Lewis on radio. And
yeah.
I thought that was very important, not only because, I mean, it's Dean and Jerry, who were very important as an act, but not too many people know about their radio work.
No,
and
exactly. I didn't know either.
Actually, yeah, some of it's actually pretty good. I mean, it was sort of a precursor or a sideline to the freewheeling TV shows they did. And in fact, both of them were written by Ed Simmons and a then young man named Norman Lear.
Yeah, I know. I love that. When I read that, I was like, oh, man, that's cool. I mean, you talk about the fact that Norman Lear is still kicking and putting out programs in 2008-19. You know, it's crazy.
I know, and it was great fun when Michael, the author, sent us some photographs to go with it, and I thought, wait a minute, I recognize that shorter guy.
Yeah,
and yes, it's Norman Lear.
That's wild.
And we've had occasion to talk with Norman for the Digest, and he's just a prince and was quite happy talking about his time with Dean and Jerry, too. So it was clearly a very important experience for everybody. And, of course, the comedy, like I say, it's not the same as the movies, but that's okay. Radio is never going to be the same as movies, and that's what makes it great.
No, and this was in 1959, so it was 4 years earlier that they met them at each other at the Glass Hat Club in New York City. And I remember the story because I've heard Jerry tell it, I've heard Dean tell it, and... they debuted together in Atlantic City's 500 Club, and, you know, singing, comedy, whatever it might be. And then, you know, people don't really remember this. Some people don't. Is on radio in the late 1940s, there was a talent raid that happened. And NBC lost, you know, Jack Benny and Amos and Andy and all these shows. And during that talent raid, NBC was needed to start filling airtime, and that was one of the reasons behind Martin and Lewis becoming a radio show.
Oh yes, and one of the things the article alludes to is that, you know, the first year they were on the air, it was not a success because no one was quite sure what to do with this young team. They realized they couldn't quite be the crazy anarchic presence they were in nightclubs, but they tried shoehorning them into formats that didn't work, and right. You know, really, it didn't serve the team well. And then finally, when they came back in the early 50s, you know, they said, let's just let these guys do what they do, and that seemed to work pretty well.
Yeah, that happens with a lot of comedians. You're not quite sure how to use their sense of humor in a television show or radio show or a film, and you got to kind of let it just happen naturally. And I've heard that on so many comedians over the years. I think we have a clip of the first show, and I know, and I compare this to when Johnny Carson debuted the Tonight Show. There was like a 6 to 9 months buildup to him taking over, and I believe there was a buildup for this too. They would spend a lot of money to put this show on the air. Let's take a little listen to one of the first episodes, or the first episode of Martin and Lewis.
As you know, ladies and gentlemen, Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis are two young men who, overnight, have become the nation's comedy hit. But let's get on with the show. We take you now to the apartment of Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis, where we find the boys getting ready, somewhat nervously, to go to the NBC studios for their first radio show.
There's a tree in the meadow with a stream drifting by. Answer the phone, Jerry, I'm tying my tie.
Okay, Dean, there's a tree in the meadow with a stream drifting by. I could never be a big singer like Crosby.
Well, why not?
I sound too much like Dean.
Oh, it must be NBC again. What cowards we are. Why are we afraid to do our own radio show? After all, how big an egg can we lay?
How big? Well, if we took a large hen and got it to hold back for 2 years...
All right, Jerry, all right. Jerry, we've been acting like two frightened mice all day. We've got an ironclad contract to do the show. We got to talk to NBC sometime.
You're right. I'm not a frightened mouse. Answer the phone.
Oh, come on, Jerry, you answer it.
Dean Martin, I will tell you why I will not answer the phone. Indubitably, that is a call from NBC. And it is indubitably they want to know where the HECK we are because they are spending thousands and thousands of dollars and money to build a sensational comedy and musical extravaganza around us. And if they think we are that important, why don't they call us?
Jerry, they are calling us. Who else could it be besides NBC?
Who else? Well, it could be a wrong number, a quiz show. Hey, a quiz show. They give you money just for answering a few questions. Give me that phone. Hello, 1492 Marie Antoinette and sulfuric acid. Ship the money.
Okay, there you go. A little sampling of that. But you're saying that that format of that show, Steve, didn't fly the second season.
Right. No, the first season, as I say, they put them almost in a situation comedy format, and then they tried to shoehorn all these other ancillary characters into that, and then on top of that, shoehorn guest stars into it, like William Bendix and Lucille Ball. And, you know, it was a lot of eggs to put in one souffle, to coin a phrase.
Yeah.
And so when they came back in the 50s, it was more of a straight variety show with Dean as the master of ceremonies. You know, he'd sing a couple songs. He'd introduce Jerry. They'd do some stuff. Jerry might sing a song. They'd bring on a guest star. They'd do a sketch together. I mean, and it worked really pretty well. I mean, we've got one of those coming up on our show next month with
That's great.
Rhonda Fleming. But, I mean, they had all of the great guest stars on the radio show, just as they did on the television show, too. So, and as you point out, it was a time when NBC needed to hit radio shows, so they were willing to move mountains to make this work.
Yeah.
And thankfully, they were patient and made it work.
And Steve, wasn't that more when they retooled it? That was more in keeping with their nightclub shows.
Oh, definitely. You know, yeah, the second season was. Again, they couldn't be quite as crazy and freewheeling because they were working with scripted material. But the radio version of the Martin Lewis show, when they took on the variety show aspect, like the Colgate Comedy Hour, it really clicked a lot more easily.
And it allowed Jerry to be the visual comedian that he was and was in the nightclub show, which, as we know, in a comedy sketch type situation, you know, it happens in all of the older comedy shows, when you have to ad lib because somebody breaks up or a sound effect doesn't happen at the right time or something like that, that makes for an even bigger laugh than what was scripted.
Oh, yeah. I mean, obviously on radio he couldn't be visual in the same way he was on television with costumes and whatnot. But in a way, I think that actually probably made him a better comedian because he could do everything with his voice. And, of course, that was magnificent.
Yeah.
You heard it.
Yeah, definitely. It was. I love some of the earlier Martin Lewis radio stuff. The TV stuff is just hilarious. So much of it is available.
Colgate,
the Colgate Comedy Hour,
yeah.
And but the other thing is on the Colgate Comedy Hour, they had to squeeze those in because they were so busy with their nightclub acts, with the films and everything else. They were not on every week because they couldn't fit everything into their schedule. And the show, so much of it is on YouTube nowadays, and it's just beautiful to relive that kind of reckless comedy. As much as it was planned out by the two of them, it still had the air of spontaneity, and that's what added to the enjoyment.
And that's what we like to do in Nostalgia Digest, is hopefully, you know, we include articles about a variety of topics that hopefully do inspire people to think, oh, we need to check this out. We need to learn more about this. And when we can, we feature performers in the Digest on our radio show. Those were the days. But like I say, that's been the purpose of the Digest from the very beginning, is hopefully take subjects that merit people's attention and put them all together.
I've got two little trivia points before we talk about where you can get the Digest. For Dean Martin, here's a good one here. He got $34 million later in life for not rehearsing. So when he was doing the Dean Martin show, he got $34 million to do three more seasons of a series. But he said, I hate rehearsing. They hired a stand-in to do that for him so he could play golf Monday through Thursday. And here's the other thing. He hated parties. That's the guy, the epitome of you know, the drunk and everything else, hated parties. Lewis, the two things I found that was pretty interesting is he never wore the same socks twice, much like Roger never wears underwear more than once.
Well, who says, never mind, let's go on.
And then the other one, he would never carry dirty money. If he felt that there was any dirty money, he would either, if it was low dollar amounts, he would throw it out, or he would make his assistants go to the bank and get some crisp bills. Now, so here they're on the front cover. We're going to talk about some other articles that are in this month's magazine, but how do folks get it, and how much is the subscription?
Well, they can, 1 year subscription is 4 issues for $17. 2 year subscription is 8 issues for $30. You can get a subscription at nostalgiadigest.com, or you can call our offices at 773-769-6575. Do I have time to mention the deal?
Yeah, let's do it.
Yes. Well, you have a colleague over there, Carl Amari. Mm-hmm. Carl and Lisa Wolf do the WGN Radio Theater. And thanks to Carl, we've worked out a deal whereby if you buy a 2-year subscription and either online or by calling us, and you mention WGN in the course of placing the order, we will send absolutely free a set of CDs featuring Carl's Twilight Zone radio show.
Yeah, it's very cool.
It's like a $27 value, I think he told me, and and there it is, absolutely free. And all you need to do is mention WGN when you buy a 2-year subscription. And again, you're already saving money with the 2-year subscription. And again, it's nostalgiadigest.com or 773-769-6575. I should point out, if you call right now, I probably won't take the call because I'm on the phone with Dave Plyer.
That is true.
But once I'm off the phone, feel free to call.
All right, that sounds good. Wake up his wife. All right, so what else is in the magazine? Because there's a lot of other goodies in here as well.
Well, we're thrilled because it's always been about nostalgia has always been a pretty broad umbrella in the Digest. So we have an article about Francis Langford, the singer who was on the Bob Hope show for many years and toured the world with him during World War II, and then when she came home to play Blanche Bickerson opposite Donna Meachie. We have an article about Sid Collins, the fellow who was the announcer for the Indianapolis 500 for so many years. We have an article about John Garfield, the actor. We have an article, actually, which I'm really pleased about the late, great Riverview Amusement Park.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's what I'm talking about. It's like there are articles that cover all kinds of things about the past. If this was just an article or an issue, a magazine about old radio, I mean, it would conceivably be entertaining, but I understand it wouldn't necessarily be entertaining on the same level as something that has articles about radio and movies and television and auto racing and amusement parks that are no longer with us.
Yeah, right. Well, I mean, there's something for everyone. You know, even though some of those things, like, I have interest in, so I read it, but then there's some things that are just, I learn a lot about some of these performers and so forth from the past. I love that. And then there was, of course, the Necrology. Yeah, which is
big
what
word,
you do
yes.
every year. I know, I'm sorry, I couldn't get that out.
No, it's 3:30 in the morning.
It is 3:30 in the morning, exactly. But that's always been a tradition in the magazine, is kind of talking about those who passed the year before with some great stories and unique stories in there.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a pleasure to, I mean, I say it's never a pleasure to put together a list of those who have passed on, but I'm glad for the opportunity to acknowledge the passing of people who have contributed a lot to the golden age of entertainment and beyond. And sometimes that means a big name star like a Burt Reynolds mm-hmm. or a John Mahoney or a Marty Allen or Nanette Fabre. Sometimes it means that person you heard on the radio and weren't aware of who they were. Sometimes it means that person, oh, man, he was on every TV show in the 60s and 70s, you know?
Sure, sure.
He was on Wonder Woman, and he was on Cannon, and he was on The Fugitive.
Right, right.
And he made it to 94. Good for him.
Yeah.
And speaking of television, we also have an interview with Thelma Lou.
Oh, from Andy Griffith?
Betty Lynn,
that's right,
yes.
That's right.
And that was, if we have time to talk about it, I'd love to tell this story.
Sure, sure,
but if we don't, I'll come back and do it. But Betty Lynn, who was Thelma Lou on The Andy Griffith Show, she was a wonderful lady, is a wonderful lady. She's living out in Mount Airy, I think, in North Carolina. And she's in the mountains, and I guess the cell phone reception isn't everything it ought to be. And this is one of my favorite interviews because we got on the phone with her. And basically, it was her people said, well, you know, we get out there once a week to see her, so we'll have the cell phone with us.
And oh, wow.
I know. She doesn't need a cell phone. She
no,
lives in the mountains.
Not. So, yeah.
And so the reception was strange, and she turned away after about 8 minutes, and we lost her, and we never quite got her back. And so it was the longest interview I ever did, because finally, like a month later, we were back on the phone with her.
Oh, that's
recording.
Funny.
So, yes, it was, and yes, she got to talk about her time in radio when she was a teenager and then went out to Hollywood and went on the Lux Radio Theater, you know, long before the Andy Griffith Show.
That's cool. Very, very
yeah.
cool. And you hit the road quite a bit and talk about this stuff around town. Tell us where you're going to be next, Steve.
Yes. Thank you for reminding me.
Uh-huh.
Thankfully, it's a couple days away. Actually, yes, I do have different presentations I've put together about radio and different aspects of it. Monday night, April 15th at 7 p.m., I'm going to be talking about radio mystery and horror at the Worth Public Library down on 111th Street. Wednesday the 24th at 7 p.m., I'll be at the Barrington Area Public Library on the other side of the world to talk about comic strip heroes on radio. And because, I mean, the comic strip heroes, Orphan Annie and Superman, I mean, they're everywhere right now, of course, but 100 years ago, they were only in the comics pages, and the first step out of that toward becoming these three-dimensional characters was their appearing on radio.
Wow!
So we're going to tune into some samples of some of the comic strip heroes who were on radio back in those days.
Very, very cool. Very, very cool. And tell folks again, how do they get Nostalgia Digest magazine?
Absolutely, yes. You can go to nostalgiadigest.com. And get a 1 or 2 year subscription, or you can call our offices at 773-769-6575. Or if you don't have a computer or a phone, you can send a check or a money order to Nostalgia Digest, Box 25734, Chicago 60625.
Always a pleasure, Steve Darnell. Appreciate it.
Dave Plyer, thank you. It's always a treat.
We'll talk to you soon.
All right, take care.
All right, we'll be right back.